that what we have in the new plan of giving this long period of time before things are done will create another mentality within the Bureau of saying, not only must I say I feared for my life, therefore I used lethal force to defend myself, but oh, I got to wait now. I've got a whole lot of time. And if it doesn't seem like I'm going to be charged with anything, I don't even have to say anything. I can just wait the time out. That is not acceptable to the community. The fix is not doing the same thing. It must become innovative. But the innovation must also come with a strong determination for forward movement, identifying the underlying issues and correcting those issues before we move in the same direction and find out that we've got the same thing again. And you know the definition of doing the same thing the same way all the time. Let's change the definition. Let's change our action. Let's take a new road so that we can solve the issues. I understand that 405 was built to help alleviate traffic around the city of Portland. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. What a mess it has given us. Let's not create another mess. Let's take the time to get this right so we don't have to go, oops, let's give it another try. Thank you for your commitment, for what you have been doing and what you will continue to do. And know that as you are continuing to move in a way that creates a better fabric for our community, you will see a community who will rise up and give you all the support that you need. If not, you will find a community that will rise up and say, no way, not going to happen. Try all you want. We're not going to support it. And need I not remind you, we know how to vote. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Buckley. Thank you, Dr. Hines.
I'm happy to answer any questions, but I don't want to prolong the time.
Very good. Thank you for your patience and thank you for your testimony. And our last invited testimony before we get to public testimony, District Attorney Rod Underhill, he's probably very tired of me trying to interpret his legal interpretation, so we thought who better to do it than the district attorney himself. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, members of the City of Portland's commissioners. My name is Rod Underhill. I am Multnomah County's district attorney. Again, want to thank you for inviting me to speak today. First, I do want to make it very clear that my office has, as a standing practice, taken every case in which an officer's use of physical force results in death to a Multnomah County grand jury to determine whether the officer's actions were criminal or not. My office will continue this practice without interruption, even after today. If the grand jury returns an indictment, I believe that, legally and ethically, we can and we will continue to make our best efforts to argue the legal viability of that indictment if a motion to dismiss is filed. We will make every appropriate argument available. As your district attorney, a primary goal of mine has been for our citizens to have confidence in the public safety system. Now, confidence in the public safety system includes, among other things, a fair faith in a fair and thorough criminal investigation, while at the same time providing individuals with the protections found in both the U.S. and the Oregon Constitution. Confidence in our system is enhanced when we have responsible transparency. This is a significant part of why I, not by law, but by policy, refer all officer-involved use of deadly physical force where a death occurs to a grand jury of citizens selected by the court, not by law, but by policy. Further, I have obtained from the court permission to transcribe those proceedings and release the testimony of witnesses that came before the grand jury. This practice is among the most transparent in the country. I believe this has increased, it's helped to increase the community's confidence in their public safety system. I do have a deep concern that if the grand jury were to return a true bill and an indictment is issued for homicide against an officer, the indictment will be at substantial risk of being challenged and quite possibly dismissed if involved officers are compelled to give statements on the administrative side hearing matter. I assert that if an indictment for homicide were to be dismissed by the court, the public confidence that we all strive to obtain in our criminal justice system would be seriously undermined. In its simplest terms, we need to get this right. Because one of my primary duties as your district attorney is to prosecute the perpetrator of criminal acts, I believe that I owe it to the community to let them know when a policy or a practice by one of our criminal justice system partners may impact or inhibit my performance of that duty. I have informed the city, the federal government, and others of the potential ramifications of some of the proposed changes to the Portland Police Bureau's use of force policies that have existed over the last handful of months and beyond. Notably, the belief that of the need of a criminal investigation to precede the compelling of a statement of the involved officer. Let me be clear. That is not to say that the administrative investigation cannot occur concurrently with the criminal investigation. It can. What I'm saying is there are substantial legal risks to the investigative action of compelling the statement of an involved officer, understanding that this is just one, albeit significant, aspect of a thorough investigation. This is not a new position of the District Attorney's Office. My office's track record on this issue has been clear, and it has been consistent for years. My concern regarding my office's ability to prosecute an indicted individual stems from a reading of a string of Oregon cases, the analysis of which is supported by the Oregon Department of Justice. The cases include, as you've heard today, federal and state, to include the 1984 adopted Supreme Court opinion in State of Oregon versus Soriano, where Soriano states that when a person is compelled by external factors to choose between making a statement that may place them in legal jeopardy and some other result, such as losing employment, three things may occur with regard to that statement. Number one, the statement may yet not be used as evidence in the criminal case, commonly referred to as use immunity. Number two, in addition to use immunity, any evidence that was obtained as a result of the receipt of that statement may not be used in the criminal case. We refer to that as use and derivative use immunity. Or number three, a potential ramification is a criminal case may not be brought against a person. That is commonly referred to as transactional immunity. In State of Oregon versus Soriano, the court settled on number three and says that the state may only legally compel a statement from a person asserting his or her right to remain silent when a promise of transactional immunity occurs. The court in Soriano further commented that it was not possible for the state to erect a wall between the compelled statement and the criminal investigation. Since the Soriano decision, the Oregon appellate courts have revisited the issue on a handful of cases. My office produced a memorandum explaining our analysis, several pages long, but included in that analysis, we wrote, quote, "The breadth of the consequences for not providing full transactional immunity is what remains unclear. Certainly, the consequence is use and derivative use immunity. However, it is also possible transactional immunity may be required in certain circumstances." I acknowledge today, as we did when we wrote our memorandum and asked the Oregon Department of Justice to review our legal analysis, that the case law since Soriano is not completely clear on this point. I am here to point out that I believe that there is a risk that the court may determine that transactional immunity would result from the compulsion of a statement from an involved officer, and that that risk is substantial. In other words, a risk of dismissal of a grand jury's indictment is real. I understand that the reasonable legal analysis can result in a different opinion. That's what we point out as well, is there is tension in the law and a lack of complete clarity. It is critical that the legal analysis surrounding the issue of administrative side compelled statements of involved officers be accurate. As I said earlier, we need to get this right. This will result in either the continued support of the public confidence or the lack thereof if we develop a system that would result in the dismissal of an indictment for a homicide against an officer, if appropriate. The council must have, this council, when you make these decisions, must have your best possible legal analysis available. And to that end, I continue to completely support the City of Portland's effort to attempt to seek guidance from Oregon's courts. Particularly, I support the city's efforts to have our courts review the constitutional implication of the city's administrative practices surrounding the issues of compelling statements from involved officers. The Oregon Revised Statutes, Chapter 33, provides for a validation action, and I support the city continuing to explore that option. Everyone will benefit from the clarity that a reviewing court can and we hope will offer. I encourage you to act with a strong sense of urgency. The sooner the better. Thank you.
Thank you.
So you said that, yes. In your testimony that you believe there can be a parallel administrative investigation and criminal investigation?
I do, but with one point of clarification.
It's the compulsion of testimony under the administrative that has to wait until the criminal investigation is finished? Is that
Commissioner Saltzman? Exactly.
Okay.
It's because of that, if I can summarize.
Sure.
Investigations are often immense. There are numerous aspects of a crime scene that need to be looked at carefully and thoroughly. A very important aspect of a criminal investigation or an administrative investigation is a conversation with the involved participant. Of course, that's important. We can, and I believe we should, have parallel investigations doing all the work that needs to be done, but I'm asking, because of these concerns, to not compel the involved officer until the criminal proceeding is complete for genuine concerns that we have a legal exposure relative to an indictment if returned.
And complete means the action by the grand jury?
Yes.
Right.
Essentially, that's what I mean. In almost every circumstance, upon the grand jury review, if they've returned a not true bill, then that criminal side investigation would be complete.
Mr. DA, let me
yes,
go back to this
Fish.
Question. And thank you for walking us through your analysis. It was very clear. But I think someone who is not a lawyer and who is listening to this conversation might say that the idea of youth immunity makes sense. There's a basic fairness behind that. And the idea of use and derivative use immunity has a certain logic. But I look at transactional immunity, or may look at this question of transactional immunity, and say that there's a leap here. And they may think there's a leap because the premise of these of how you structure the administrative and the criminal investigation is that there be a strong firewall between the two. And that strong firewall ensures that the evidence gathered in the administrative side does not bleed into the criminal investigation. And we know from our understanding of criminal law, whether we practice the law or watch Law and Order, that the court has the tools to keep evidence out of the proceeding that should not be there. That's why evidence is suppressed. That's why all kinds of things are kicked out. So let me go back to what I think for a lot of people is the sticking point here.
Sure.
Again, I'm not quibbling about use immunity or use and derivative immunity. That seems to have a logic. But if there is a sufficient firewall between the two investigations, How does the compelled statement on the administrative side ever bleed into the criminal investigation and therefore create a Fifth Amendment problem?
So your Commissioner Fish, thank you for the question. And your question is one that in most all states in the country is a proper analysis of the status of those states and how they proceed relative to this critical question. We've had numerous talks with our partners from the U.S. Department of Justice, some of whom are here, both the chapter in Oregon and Maine Justice. And that is an accurate reflection of most of the country. None of the country, no state other than ours, has State of Oregon versus Soriano. And Soriano tells us in very clear language with respect to the wall aspect, Justice Gillette, who at the time was a court appeals judge but went on to a distinguished career on the Supreme Court bench, told us that it was impossible in Oregon to erect such a wall. And had an analysis about why that was impractical in today's modern society.
Whether or not you can actually show actual prejudice?
No, they're just refusing legally to recognize the existence of the attempts to build a wall. Now, can a wall be built securely? There's a lot of... short answer is yes. I believe it can, but Justice Gillette found that it can't, in his opinion, and used that word impossible. And this is why I encourage the passage of, I think it's 871, in order to have reviewing courts determine whether can we build a wall as suggested in the ordinance. Because Soriano tells us that in Oregon, they will not legally recognize your attempts, whether successful or not, just use the word impossible to build a wall.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. So I want to do a little bit of house cleaning here. First of all, I want to ask my colleagues, before we get into the public testimony, are there any questions you need answered now? Is there a desire to introduce any amendments at this point, or would you rather wait until after public testimony?
So, Mayor, it was my hope that the amendments that our colleagues have prepared would now be put on the table so that anyone testifying would have an opportunity to address the amendments as well as the ordinance before.
Okay,
them.
How many people do we have signed up for public testimony?
33.
So that's a little over three hours of public testimony. So I need to ask my colleagues:
An hour and a half, Mayor.
If we give
three minutes.
Yeah, that's correct.
I wish, as long as necessary.
I wish I could add.
I'll be here all night.
Yeah, okay, good.
So we'll have a quorum. So we can allow 3 minutes of public testimony. So let's go ahead and introduce amendments. I would propose we take a three-minute break after that, since we've been convened for 3 hours and 40 minutes. I could certainly use it. And then we will come back and hit the public testimony. So at this point, colleagues, I will entertain any amendments that people would like to make.
Mayor, I have five amendments I'd like to offer now.
Commissioner Udaly?
I may have more by the end of this. Okay. Amendment number one, increase membership of the PSUP from 5 to 9 members to 9 to 11 members.
Second.
So we have a motion from Commissioner Udaly. We have a second from Commissioner Fritz regarding the membership of PSUP. We will call that Udaly Amendment 1.
Number 2, change item number 2 in the selection process framework section from initial screening of applicants by mayoral staff to initial screening of applicants by mayoral staff and a representative from any council office who wishes to participate.
Second.
So we have a motion from Commissioner Udaly, a second from Commissioner Fritz. That will be Udaly Amendment number 2.
Number 3, change item number 4 in selection process framework section from candidate interviews with mayor to candidate interviews with mayor after soliciting feedback about final candidates from each council office.
Second.
Commissioner Udaly moves. Commissioner Fritz seconds. That will be Udaly Amendment 3.
Number 4, add under city's responsibilities, the mayor's office will publish on the city website an annual report commencing from the date PSEP begins meeting through the duration of its existence that will include updates on progress made by the city in key areas of concern and community engagement recommendations.
Second.
Commissioner Udaly moves. Commissioner Fritz seconds. That is Udaly Amendment 4.
And finally, number 5, add under member responsibilities that agendas and minutes from all PSEP meetings will be published on the city website within 30 days after the meeting date.
Second.
That is moved by Commissioner Udaly. It's seconded by Commissioner Fritz. That is Udaly Amendment number 5. And any further?
That's all for now.
All for now. Very good. Commissioner Fritz?
Thank you, Mayor. I have a lot of technical amendments. They're all related to engagement by the entire council and the community in this ongoing process. The first one, which is my Amendment 1, is a very technical one. There's a section about the responsibilities of the police members, and then there's a, along with the community members in the Citizens Review Committee. And so that's Exhibit 4, Paragraph 131, where the piece, subparagraph I, which is about the police members, is disconnected from the other sections with the police members. It's not changing the language at all. It's just reordering them.
I'll second that.
Okay,
and
so
I'll obviously put this up on my website so that it's clear.
So there is a motion from Commissioner Fritz. There's a second from Commissioner Udaly. That will be Fritz Amendment number 1.
Amendment 2 is speaking to the concern that in the proposal, everything reports to the mayor, and the mayor is also in charge of the police bureau. So my second amendment says amend Exhibit 4, which is the proposed amended settlement agreement, paragraph 142, to add the following language, make recommendations to the chief police commissioner and the director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights and the community and during this effective period of this agreement to the Department of Justice.
I'll second that amendment.
So that is moved by Commissioner Fritz. That is seconded by Commissioner Udaly. That will be Fritz Amendment number 2.
And then, so those are both actually in the settlement agreement. And then I have a number that are amendments to the Exhibit 4.1, which is the plan for the Portland Commission on Community Engaged Policing. So on page 2, again, add the office under the specific authorizations of the PSEP. Number 2 says gather and synthesize information from the community and make recommendations based on that information in key areas of concern to communicate to the mayor, PPB, add the Office of Equity and Human Rights and the DOJ and public at last. So again, bringing in the Office of Equity and Human Rights, which, as many of you know, staffs the Human Rights Commission and the Portland Commission on Disability.
Second. I'll second that.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz moves. Commissioner Udaly seconds. That is Fritz Amendment number 3.
Commissioner Fritz, I have a question. We have the red line version with all of your changes.
Yes.
Are you planning to introduce every one of those as a separate technical? Are you going to offer this?
These are all Amendment 3, which are... Good. If that's all right with you, Mayor.
I think it's cleaner because we have a red line version.
Unless anybody objects to any of them. We could just to get them into the record. So, I know, so I'm going to get them to you as well.
I'm sorry, for clarification, these you do not want these three
No, Mayor, separate
Mayor,
the
amendments?
Third amendment on that sheet references
okay.
a document
yes.
we've been given that has red line.
Yes, so the entire red line document
is
offered as an amendment, correct.
So, and this is
It is
the,
one exhibit.
What you have also in Exhibit 4.1.
Correct.
My guess is if we have a couple of hours of testimony, we might not get to vote on things tonight anyway, so... I apologize. I only just got back from England about 48 hours ago, and so I was working till 5 a.m. this morning on these changes.
And just to be clear, these are non-emergency ordinances, so they'll be moved to second reading.
That's right. They'll go to next week anyway, so I'll be sure to get them up on my website as soon as possible. So under membership and reporting, it currently says the PSEP will report directly to the mayor, who's the police commissioner, and that's it. I'm proposing to add... and separately and at least quarterly to the Director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights.
I'll second that.
That is moved by Commissioner Fritz, seconded by Commissioner Udaly. That will be Fritz Amendment Number 4.
And this, the next piece is actually complementary what Commissioner Udaly proposed. We hadn't talked about it, but mine is the beginning.
Commissioner Fritz, I'm sorry. What you've just marked is as Exhibit 4, Fritz 4. Well, we were going to do 3 as a integrated document.
That's what I thought.
It is now apparently being marked as each one as a separate amendment. So I'll call it what the mayor has called it, which is Exhibit 4. I mean, I want to go back to this idea of reporting to the mayor and the director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights. I mean, that the director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights reports to the mayor. So what's the additional value of having that report if that person ultimately is accountable to the mayor?
Actually, the director of the Office of Human Equity and Human Rights is responsive to the entire council. If you remember how we set up the Office of Equity and Human Rights.
I understand, but the mayor has taken the Bureau in his portfolio.
These are my amendments. We can certainly discuss them. I would like to get them on the table so that the community knows what they are.
Okay, I will withhold my clarifying questions at this point. But
thank you.
I think the council has a right to ask questions about amendments.
I'm certainly willing to wait all night so you can do that after the community testimony. The next amendment is under the selection in Exhibit 4.1 to add at the beginning, the mayor in consultation with the other council officers shall develop selection criteria and public outreach strategies for the PSEP selection process. Currently, Exhibit 4.1 doesn't say how the selection criteria are going to be developed. Then on the next page, page 3, we're going to add the selection process has the application, screening, review by the panel of community members, the candidate interviews, the mayor's appointment, and then we're going to add council confirmation. So there will be a public hearing on the confirmation of the members of the commission. The next one is under removal. Again, it currently says the mayor, the PSEP manager, and PSEP chair will have discretion to decide when PSEP members are no longer fit to serve. I'm proposing to insert the mayor, after consultation with the council and those other entities, will have sole discretion. So I'm just going to keep going here. There's just a typo on page 4 of 7 that it refers to the Portland Police Bureau's Office of Equity.
So I want to make sure I'm keeping up. So is that last set that you just read, is that still part of Fritz 4, or are you waiting for a motion on a Fritz 5?
It's part of a Fritz 3 now.
It's still okay. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. So there's references to the Portland Police Bureau's Office of Equity and Diversity. I believe they have a manager of equity and diversity, so I'm proposing to add that as a typographic or as a stenographer's mistake. And then on page 6 of 7, I'm concerned about the specifications for how soon the public hearings need to be held of where the PSEP will consult with the community. One of the mistakes that I made with the COAB formation was that we had in the settlement agreement that the town halls had to happen by a certain date, and so the COAB was forced to have a town hall before they had even got to know each other. So I'm suggesting that we add... it currently says to be completed within 120 days of when the PSEP members are being seated. I would suggest we add if practicable so that we don't get into that same rush and not do it correctly. And number 2, I'm suggesting that the PSEP shall meet at least quarterly with the director of the city's Office of Equity and Human Rights and Portland Police Bureau's Manager of Equity and Diversity, including a review of Portland Police Bureau's current racial equity plan and evaluating the ongoing efforts to implement it.
I'm sorry, what page was that?
That's on page 6 of 7, number 2.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So again, adding in some, because it currently says that the PSEP is going to be responsible for evaluating PPB's racial equity plan. That's the one of the functions of the Office of Equity and Human Rights. Number 5, the PSEP shall strive to submit its recommended strategies in writing within 180 days without having an absolute hard mandate there. And then for the chief's office, just consult with the PSEP and give its final review and comment within 45 days of receiving the PSEP's recommendations rather than within 210 days. I'm really sorry. I know this is a lot of stuff, and I didn't get the handouts prepared, but I will certainly correct that by next week, and I'm sorry.
Great. Anybody else?
When do we discuss these amendments?
After testimony.
Yes. Okay. So let's take a 3-minute break. We'll come back and we'll start the public testimony. Who are the first three people?
Are Joanne Hardesty, Dan Handelman, and AJ Mendoza.
I just realized I didn't understand this sentence.
Okay.